From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, Yvonne Smith joins us, hypnotherapy and abductions, followed by Robert Salas. His story is called Faded Giant, but here's what's happening. Imagine you're in your house and there's just nothing you can do as a fire gets closer and closer to engulf you. That's what's happening near Boulder, Colorado. A wildfire out there has already destroyed 170 homes, just showing no signs of relenting as wind gusts of more than 40 miles an hour threaten to drive flames eastward from the Rocky Mountain foothills into the heart of Boulder, Colorado, where some residents are being warned already, take off, flee. Officials worried about a repeat of the devastation in the foothills, where neighborhoods once filled with million-dollar homes and scenic mountain cabins have now become piles of smoking rubble. And near San Francisco, a massive fire burning homes as it roared through a mostly residential neighborhood in hills south of San Francisco. They say a gas line likely exploded. The next generation of telescopes could reveal the presence of oceans on planets outside our solar system. Detecting water on Earth-like planets offers some very tantalizing prospects that they could sustain life. Scientists hope that the reflection of light from a mirror-like ocean surfaces could be picked up by a space telescope set for launch in 2014. Robert Zubrin, inventor of several unique concepts of space propulsion, on the line with us now. This sounds interesting, Robert. Do you think it's possible they'll be able to pick up reflections of light like this and say, hey, there must be an ocean there?
Yeah, I think it is possible. It's not possible with any telescope we have now, but NASA is working on a mission called the Terrestrial Planet Finder. It's a space telescope that might be able to do it. What they've got up there right now is something called the Kepler Space Telescope that's looking for extrasolar planets. And they're going to announce their first year's results in January, but the rumors going around are that they have found hundreds of Earth-sized planets around other stars.
I think so, too. Space continues to just baffle us, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I just love. What's new with you, Robert?
Well, let's see. I've got an article that's going to come out in Space News in a week or so, explaining a concept for what I call a transorbital railroad. It's basically that the government would just buy launches once a month of a heavy lift vehicle and just send them to orbit with a discount payload price, so people could launch stuff to orbit at $100 a pound. The whole program would cost less than the shuttle program cost, but instead of launching around 60 tons a year to orbit, we'd launch 700 tons. It would make it possible for everyone to get their stuff to orbit. You're talking about people, talking about cargoes, talking about space probes. It would open up the space frontier to everyone.
All right. You're always coming up with some novel ideas. Thanks, Robert Zubrin. Sheriffs in North Carolina want to access to state powerful computer records. They want to identify anyone with prescriptions for powerful painkillers and other controlled substances. The State Sheriff's Association pushed the idea, saying the move would help them make drug arrests and curb a growing problem of prescription drug abuse. But patient advocates say opening up people's medicine cabinets to law enforcement would deal a devastating blow to privacy rights. Federal health regulators are warning doctors right now that a class of injectable drugs used in MRI medical imaging scans can cause a very rare and sometimes fatal condition in patients with kidney disease. The FDA said it is adding its strongest warning label to imaging agents that contain the chemical gadolinium, highlighting the risks when used in patients with kidney problems. In at least 16 states, drugs now kill more people than auto accidents. And experts say the startling shift reflects two opposite trends. Driving is becoming safer and legal, and illegal use of powerful prescription and painkiller drugs is on the rise. In a moment, prominent defense attorney Robert Shapiro joins us, as this issue has had a very direct effect on him and his family. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Now, every time you turn on television or you read the newspaper, you hear about this prominent attorney, Robert Shapiro, just all over the place, handling high-profile cases. He's also, though, the author of the New York Times bestseller, The Search for Justice, and another novel, Misconception, is currently being adapted for a major motion picture. Robert Shapiro is the founder and chairman of the board of the Brent Shapiro Foundation for Drug Awareness. We're going to talk about that in a second, as well as the co-founder of LegalZoom.com. Here he is on Coast to Coast. Hello, Robert.
Hi, George. Thank you so much for having me and welcoming me to your wonderful audience.
Well, it's important because the mission that you have been on over the last several years is dear to my heart as well. So I wanted to talk with you about that and the effort that you and your wife have been doing. And also, of course, talk to you a little bit about your career, which is truly phenomenal.
Well, I've been very, very blessed to be able to have represented some very high-profile people and in some important cases and some landmark cases. But my real passion, as you've said right now, is the Brent Shapiro Foundation and for really talking about the epidemic of alcohol and drug dependence disease. It's sweeping our nation, it's taking lives one after the other. We lose 250,000 people a year to alcohol and drug-related cases, in accidents and overdoses, and nobody talks about it. It's the shameful, silent disease.
It is, and you know, in kids especially, are popping these pills on a regular basis, either prescription or others, like ecstasy. And I want to ask you something that, if it's painful for you, I want you to stop me. But I want you to tell us a little bit about your son, Brent, and what happened.
Brent Shapiro was one of those young men who, one of his friends said at the memorial, once you meet him, you never forget him. So he had a bigger-than-life personality. Never missed an event, whether it was a sporting event or a music event. He was doing very, very well in school. He was in his third year at USC and was on the dean's list all 3 years. And he was on his way to law school. But Brent was one of those people who was born, I believe, with a genetic propensity towards chemical dependency mm-hmm. disease and alcohol. And I'm using a different term than people use, George. People say addiction.
Right.
And I don't like the term addiction because I don't think it really conveys to people what is happening to an individual, because this is a disease. And if you say, well, you're addicted, well, you could be addicted to chocolate. You could be addicted to sex. And people don't view those as diseases. They view those as choices.
Right.
And alcoholism and drug dependence are not choices. They are real diseases, but we don't talk about them as diseases. So Brent, when he was 5 years old, was very, very hyperactive. He came out screaming, and he never got out of the terrible twos.
Yeah.
The terrible twos, I thought, he's going to be three. That's the end. And he just was one of these kids with boundless energy, couldn't focus. So we took him to UCLA, and one of the foremost doctors at the time immediately diagnosed him with attention deficit disorder, something I really knew nothing about and didn't pay a lot of attention to, other than, well, this is a famous doctor, and he says that there's some medicine that'll help him. But he told me one thing, and it stuck with me, and that was that you have to be very careful with these kids because they have a propensity to become a drug addict.
Uh-huh.
And now that we've had this foundation for 5 years, we're finding that that really is the case. So let's get back to talking about Brent, and then I'll get back to the addiction and dependency issues. Brent had been sober for 18 months. We discovered too late that he had this disease of both alcoholism and drug dependence. We had clues, we had suspicions, but
And we all do as parents.
Right? Yeah, you know, but like anybody else, you say, you know, you had a life experience. You grew up. I remember I drank too much on many occasions when I was in school.
I think I was a geek.
You know, and so, you know, you'll grow out of that. Yeah. And things will change, and don't be too strict, and, you know, don't say, well, I did it, but somebody else can't. And so we kind of avoided the issue until it became really, really apparent when he was about 18 years of age and had graduated high school and was on his way to college. And we said, you know, you have to go into rehab. And we had a classic intervention and sent him to one of the well-known rehabilitation mm-hmm. centers that are much too plush and much too luxurious.
Right.
And for 30 days, he was sober. And another 30 days in sober living after that, and he was sober. And on the 61st day, he wasn't.
He wasn't, yeah.
And that's the story. And then they tell you, well, you know, relapse is part of rehabilitation. So they tell you when you come in, you're going to fail.
I sometimes wonder if they want them to fail. Not all of them.
I don't think anybody wants you to fail, but realistically, you cannot treat any disease as serious as this in 60 days. I mean, clearly we could take somebody and put them in a bedroom in my house. And if I gave them drug tests and didn't let them out, they'd be sober for 30 days too. But the 31st day is what we're concerned about. So after he relapsed, we had some other types of therapy and outpatient and going to meetings. And finally, we sent him out of state to a facility where he was there for 8 months. And he came back, and he was straight and arrow and was doing great in school.
And he probably looked good. You could tell.
He looked, there's just no question. Yeah. Personality change, attitude change. And then he got engaged. He was ready to get married. He was ready to go to law school. And he went with his fiance to a party. But it wasn't a party that you would be concerned about. It was at Elks Lodge in Hollywood.
Yeah.
It was somebody's 30th birthday.
At Elks
he was
Lodge.
25. Yeah. You know, it was a back-to-school party. Kids uh-huh. dressed in school clothes and took school buses. And we didn't think anything of it.
Who would?
Nobody would.
No.
Nobody would, George. And then at 7 in the morning, the phone rang. And it was Sunday morning. And you know, it rings a little bit too loud and a little bit too long.
Yeah.
And it's an hour that you don't expect a call, and it's coming on a line that you don't expect anybody to be calling on.
You hate those calls.
And you pick it up, and you don't expect the news to be good, and it wasn't. Brent is turning blue. Have you called the paramedics? Yes. Where are you? How close are you to a hospital? What hospital? Cedar Sinai. We live close to your studio, near Sherman Oaks. And when we got to the hospital before the ambulance, I knew it wasn't going to be good.
No, because that's a pretty good poke.
And, you know, you have a 5 or 6 minute window for somebody who's not breathing. And he aspirated. He did not overdose. He, according to the coroner's report, had half of ecstasy and two drinks that showed up, which we later found out to be Jägermeister, broken his sobriety, and got sick.
It was the combination, the small combination. Yeah.
And nobody called the paramedics. And why didn't they call? Number one, they didn't want to be around.
They were afraid
that Brent had relapsed. I'm sure his fiance felt the wedding would be off.
Uh-huh.
Things would be bad. He'd be back in rehab. And take him home. He'll sleep it off.
He'll sleep it off. We'll forget about it the next day, right?
Exactly. And he didn't. So we had a service within 2 days, a massive service. 2,000 people came. And we did something very unusual. We only allowed people to speak who would speak about drugs and alcohol and their personal experiences with it. And then I spoke. And we came back after we buried him, and one of my friends said, "What's your favorite charity?" And I said, "You know, I support a lot of charities, but I'd really like to do something for alcohol and drug awareness." And he wrote me a check for $25,000, and he said, "Here it is, why don't you start it?" And so 5 years ago, we started the Brent Shapiro Foundation for Alcohol and Drug Awareness. And I know we have saved lives. We have started first with Save-A-Life cards.
Which is a great idea.
You know, it sounds so simple. Well, everybody knows what to do. Well, everybody doesn't know what to do.
You can download those on the BrentShapiro.org website.
.org or .com. Okay. Either one will get to it. And we pass them out free to schools across the country. And just a couple of weeks ago, one of our friend's parents said, "You know, thank you for that card. It saved my son's life." Now, her son was not suffering from alcohol or drugs, but he did have a serious condition. And she said, "You know, but for looking at the symptoms in that card, I would not have called the paramedics. I'd say I'll take him to the doctor in the morning." But she called the paramedics and they saved his life. The other thing is you can do it anonymously. People don't know that. People are afraid. So now you have a card, you see what the symptoms are, and you don't have to make a guess or a choice. You simply dial 911 and help is on its way.
Your efforts with the organization and your wife as well, absolutely stunning. For someone who's as busy as you are and as high profile as you are, you devote as much time to the organization to get this word out. When I heard about you doing this, I said, "You know what? We normally do this program. We deal with all kinds of things, sometimes very strange things, as you know. But this is a subject that I think is just so important because, as you just said, Robert, if you save the life of just one person, the whole thing's worth it."
Yeah, it just, you know, it makes me feel good to know that in Brent's name, we are saving other people's lives, and I know it will make him feel good. He came to the realization that he was a drug addict. And he said, "You know, I will never use drugs again." But he could never come to the conclusion that he was an alcoholic.
Right.
He always thought, "You know, how do you know that I can't just have a glass of wine?
And stop. Yeah.
And stop. That I can't just have a beer with the boys and stop. I know I can't do drugs. That I can tell you." And so if you don't have the realization that you have this disease and that you can't do anything other than abstain and get help, and you need help to come over this. This is not an easy disease to deal with. I tell people the best way that I could give you an analogy is we've all unfortunately seen somebody who's had too much to drink and is getting into a car to drive.
Right.
Universally, when you say, "You know, I don't think you should drive, George," what's the response?
I'm fine.
I'm okay.
You got to grab those keys.
Okay.
That's the only way.
And you're talking to smart people. You're talking to logical people. You're talking to people that if you gave them any other advice, they'd follow it.
Yeah.
They don't want to get arrested. They don't want to go to jail. They don't want to take the chance of killing somebody. But it's not they don't want to admit it. It's their brain doesn't allow them
to admit it.
It plays tricks on them. And that's why this disease is so difficult to deal with. Because people who have the disease cannot recognize the disease. if they go to a doctor and the doctor says, God forbid, you have diabetes, you have a Crohn's disease, you have a number of other diseases, they don't say, doctor, you're wrong.
They say, help us.
Exactly.
Let's get it done. Robert, we're going to take this quick break. We're going to come back and continue talking about the Brent Shapiro Foundation. And also we'll take phone calls, and let's restrict these calls tonight to those of you who have gone through similar situations, and maybe you pulled out of it, I hope. So give us a call. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, next hour, Yvonne Smith joins us as we talk about some of the wonders of hypnotherapy and what she's doing with some of her clients with some very strange cases. I'll tell you that. By the way, during the break, I was thinking, I'm glad I don't have to call Robert Shapiro to represent me for anything, but if I did, he's the one I'd want to call to represent me. So we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM with your phone calls as we continue talking about the Brent Shapiro Foundation on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Those of you on hold all around North America, I'll get right to you in just a moment, but there are a couple things here with Robert Shapiro we want to talk about. The foundation has developed something very fascinating, and it's called SOMO. What is that?
You know, we were thinking of ways to look at this epidemic and see what we can do to prevent it. We know the war on drugs is about as useful as the wars we're fighting right now.
It's not working.
It just doesn't work.
It won't work.
There's just too much money. There's too much availability. Also, right now, the real problem, or one of the more significant problems, is prescription drugs that you can get over the internet. FedEx will deliver them. So availability has never been a problem. So what we have to do is the supply side will never end. Never has, never will. The demand side is what we have to look at.
Exactly.
How do we stop people from saying, don't even experiment? Because we know that 15% of the people who experiment will have a horrible problem. We know genetically that that percentage are predisposed to this disease. And once they get exposed to alcohol or drugs, they have a problem.
They can't stop.
We know that if you even begin to try to sample alcohol or drugs before the age of 14, there's a 500 to 800% more likely chance that you will have a lifelong problem.
That's frightening, because a lot of kids in that age bracket are probably doing just that.
Exactly right.
Ugh.
So it's very, very scary. So what do we do to deal with this? So I came up with the idea of creating a sober hero for kids. I remember when I was growing up, there was a thing called Smokey the Bear.
I remember Smokey.
And nobody forgot Smokey the Bear. You know what he looked like, you saw him, and you don't want to get involved in a forest fire or throwing anything out of a car that could start a fire. Based on that, I came up with the idea of creating another animal that would be something a kid could relate to and hold on to, a new best friend. And I came up with the idea of SOMO. SOMO is the sober monkey. And the way I came up with it is my son's nickname was Monk.
Okay.
So I put together Sober and Monk.
And there it is.
I came up with SOMO, and the name has stuck. Based on that, we wanted to develop a character that people could see and relate to. And we did a contest around the country, and we sent them pictures of Brent with big blue eyes and spiky hair, and asked them to create a monkey in that image. And we have come up with an animated cartoon character.
A little caricature of Brent, huh?
That's half human, half monkey, but you look at it and you say, that's SOMO.
That's great.
And we have a stuffed animal, but more importantly, we have a 32-page children's book. It is illustrated. It is captivating, and it deals with SOMO, who is a sober hero. And SOMO has two messages for the kids between the ages of 5 and 10. First is, It takes a friend to save a friend.
Brilliant.
The second is that when Somo and his friends get involved with the bad pirates and see what they're doing, and they try to force this funny juice into them, and they're acting silly and crazy, and Somo says, we've got to get out of here. And Somo says, no. We've tested this with kids across the country now, and the reaction is amazing.
It's got to be overwhelming.
They love the character, they love Somo, and they get the message. And we have a tutorial in the book of how parents can use it, to read it to five-year-olds, to have 10-year-olds explain it back to them. We have a website up now called thesobermonkey.com. We have a game on there right now, a Pac-Man-type game with Somo. We're developing a couple more games. But the best of all, George, is we're going to distribute this book free of charge to schools across the country.
That's amazing.
We did it all in-house. We wrote the story.
You're doing this just with donations?
Just with donations. Just with
all the money they've been spending on TARP money and things, you would think they'd see programs like this and say, here's X amount of money, go do it.
You know, the problem is nobody wants to admit there's a problem. The schools don't want to admit there's a problem in their school. Oh, maybe another school has it, but not theirs. Well, guess what? Be aware, it's everywhere.
Absolutely. And you're right about the prescription drugs. It's easy, and these kids are taking this stuff all the time.
It's not only kids.
No, it's not.
And, you know, this is another thing. I don't care whether this disease is genetic or it's acquired. Does it make any difference, George, if you went to the hospital and you saw somebody dying of lung cancer and they voluntarily smoked 3 packs a day, or if they never smoked and worked in a bar and had secondhand smoke?
Yeah.
It's the same disease. And right now we have doctors who unfortunately will give major types of narcotics to people who are complaining of pain. It's very, very difficult for the doctors to gauge the degree of pain. They give you a scale. On 1 to 10, mark your pain.
10. I have a 10. 10. It hurts.
Yeah. I have a 10. Oh, fine. Take some Vicodin.
Yep.
How many do doctors do? Doctors somehow automatically give a prescription for 30 pills. They don't give 18. They don't give 12. They don't give 10. You get 30.
Yeah.
You know, take them as needed, or take once every 12 hours. The first 12 hours, you feel better. And you say, you know what? It's only 8 hours. Maybe I'll take another. And then, you know, next day, maybe if I took 2, I'd feel better than taking 1. And within 5 days, you have somebody addicted to Vicodin.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or worse, Oxycontin. This is a drug that was designed for people in stage 4 cancer that's metastasized, and where people have
severe pain.
And doctors give it out for people with ingrown toenails, with toothaches. And they give, again, 30-day supply. It's a starter kit for addiction.
Yeah. And in some cases, if you go back to him again,
you'll get more.
You'll get more.
And if you're high profile, they want to please you and take away your pain. And that's really unfortunate.
Let's take a few calls here, Robert, in the time we've got with you. And then we'll get this website out again, because, I mean, do you take small donations over the website?
We take any kind of donation on the website. It's BrentShapiro.com or .org. Or you can call our line, which is 310-556-7886. I'm sorry, 7887. 7887. Usually during the working hours, there's somebody there that can take donations. But the easiest way is to go on the website. There's a spot there to donate with your credit card. And any donation goes to save lives and to get this book out to the public, get the Save a Life cards out, keep our website going, and spread the word. And the most important thing that I think I can leave your audience with this evening is communicate. Talk about this. If you think there's a problem, there is. And I will tell you, if everybody who's listening doesn't know somebody who is directly affected by this disease, if they turned off their radio, you would have no listeners.
3 weeks ago, I was in St. Louis. God is my judge. And there's a guy that everybody knows, and everybody listening to us in St. Louis right now knows him. And every time you would see him, Robert, he'd be screwed up. I mean, every time. Combination of drinking too much and drugs. And the last time I saw him, I said, you know what? And I won't mention his name. I said, you've got to stop this because it's going to kill you. 2 days later, I get a phone call from people. He died.
Yeah.
Died of an OD. He's in his early 40s. He's gone.
We hear it all the time.
Crazy.
We hear it all the time.
All right, we'll pick it up. We'll go to Mansfield, Ohio, first of all, on the wild card line. Deborah, you're on with Robert Shapiro. What's your story, Deborah?
I am a recovering alcoholic. I have 25 and a half years of drug-free, alcohol-free. And the thing is, you have to watch who your friends are and pick your friends cautiously. I have been, people have tried to sabotage my sobriety, but I don't let them. Another thing is, you have to watch your doctors. I have been to doctors, and they try to give me painkillers and anything narcotic, I will not do.
Good for you. Good for you. And in your world, what about the peer pressure of friends?
That's really, really important, and it's very, very difficult because most social life is around going out and, unfortunately, around drinking. And we're not advocating abstinence in any way, shape, or form, but responsibility. But it's very, very difficult for people in recovery to be around people who are drinking, and that's... There's very few alternatives for them for social life. One of the things, George, and thank you so much for calling, Deborah, is you said, what's your story? We have public service announcements. There are 30 seconds. I did one. My wife did one. Several of Brent's friends did them. And a couple of just other people, some young kids in recovery, and actually one guy in jail. They're on our website. It's, that's my story, what's your story? They are cold, they are chilling, and I encourage anybody who's listening to go to BrentShapiro.org. If you have a child, watch those for 30 seconds with your child. It may save their life.
Could our, you know, we've got 540 stations out there. If any of them are interested in using those PSAs, can they call the organization?
Absolutely. Okay. We will send them out to anybody. We have them on disk. You can download them. I just can only say, look at them and listen to them. And they're on YouTube also.
Super. Okay. Let's go to Michael, Long Beach, California. First time caller. Hey, Michael, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, Mr. Norrie, Mr. Shapiro. Mr. Shapiro, I was just like your son. They actually diagnosed me with hyperactive disease. They didn't have a ADHD back when I was a child. I'm 51 now, and I got sober when I was 30, so I've been sober 21 years, and it's completely turned my life around. So
good for
I'd like to say that what you're doing is a really good thing. I started drinking when I was 7 years old.
How did you get to the booze, Michael?
We were camping in the mountains, and we found some wine that some teenagers had stashed, and I drank a couple, three glasses of it, and I threw up all over, and I couldn't wait to do it again. Most people would never do it again, but for me, I got that big warm feeling inside, and I was addicted to it from that first glass of wine on, and I never stopped.
Michael, nobody could say it more than that's a disease.
That's a disease. By 10, I was doing drugs, and by 14, I was doing hard drugs and more alcohol, and my life was just chaos from that point on. And I had an epiphany when I was 30 sitting on a jail cell floor after wrecking a car and getting a DUI. And I asked the policeman, I said, so, you know, you ever have these problems, wreck your car, go to jail? He said, no, I don't drink. And that was my epiphany. That was my moment of clarity. And I realized that it was a disease of denial, and I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I didn't want to do it again.
If you didn't have that epiphany, Michael, you know, you would be even making these phone calls right now.
That's true. Yep.
I'm glad you did what you did.
You know, the other thing that you bring up now is, I don't think people realize this, in California and maybe in some other states, if you are driving under the influence, and I hate the term drunk driving, because it is a misconception that you have to be falling down drunk to get arrested. It's under the influence.
That's right.
Does it affect your ability so you cannot drive the way you could if you had nothing to drink? Which basically means if you have two drinks, you shouldn't be driving. If, God forbid, you get into a freak accident, and as a result of that accident, a car may run over a pedestrian or hit a pedestrian, or a third car hit somebody, you are going to be charged in California with murder.
Ugh.
And you're going to be facing life in prison.
Unbelievable. But what else can they do? They have to get you.
Exactly right. So the consequences are overwhelming. Michael, congratulations on your sobriety, one day at a time.
Let's go to the international line. We've got Dick in Vancouver, British Columbia. Hey, Dick, go ahead.
Yeah, I'll tell you my story. I started drinking at an early age. I came from an alcoholic family, and I was really on a bad path. And I sort of got out of it in my early and mid-30s. I began meditating and learning how to dance, learning how to do the swing dances and the Latin dances and the ballroom dances. And I just exchanged the whole drunken lifestyle for a lifestyle of dancing and meditating, and totally lost my desire to drink.
Well, the fact that you just lost that desire to drink, I mean, how many people could do that? Are you unique there, Dick?
No, I don't think I'm unique. It's just, you know, it's a preferable lifestyle in that way, because when you have a social skill like dancing, you can have a hell of a good social life and a hell of a good nightlife. And alcohol is just something, you just perceive it as something that gets in the way. You wouldn't want to do that to yourself. Also, it turns out that dancing, as long as no booze is involved, is one of the most healing things a person can do for their brain. That's what Dr. Daniel Amen, that specialist in brain injury, said on Coast to Coast a couple of years ago.
Right, but it's going to take a lot of dancing if you got drugs in your system.
You know, I think you're one of the unique people that just decided it's better not to drink, and you did not have the disease. But those with the disease are not capable of, number one, recognizing it, or number two, doing it without a lot of help.
And it's this combination that we were talking about earlier, Robert, that is so deadly. This, you know, so if you have a couple glasses of wine, and doctors say physically that might be good for you, it's good for your arteries, but this combination of drinking and drugs and excess. Now, in Brent's case, it wasn't a lot, but it was enough.
You know, in his case, it was a reaction to taking things he shouldn't be taking, and nobody should be taking,
right,
and nobody calling attention to it. But in other cases, it could have been with him. It could have been an overdose also.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, next up we go to, let's see if we have time. A minute to go. That's all we have. Robert in Scranton, Pennsylvania. Just a quick minute for you. Go ahead.
Yeah, George, it's an honor to speak with you. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thanks, Robert.
And Mr. Shapiro, my condolences to your loss.
Thank you so much, Robert.
I have a problem. Is I've been taking medication for a long time for bulging disc and that, but then I had an accident at work, and I had to have surgery. So I've been on pain medication now for a good 6 years, but I try to get off of it, and when I do try to get off of it, my pain comes back, and it's so severe enough that I have to get back on it.
Yeah, that's difficult. And, you know, Robert, as we get to the end of the clock, and it's strange that we talk about drugs and drugs, but they say medicinal marijuana would help someone like Robert because he can't take pain pills.
You know, that may be an alternative that his doctor should examine.
Yeah, he really is. Robert, thank you so much. Anything you need, you call us, and it's good to meet you.
Real pleasure. Thanks for having me on, George, and congratulations on all your success.
Robert Shapiro, the website, BrentShapiro.com or .org. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.